Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum.
Good evening. This is Rhea Goodman, and welcome to Living Juicy, the show that talks with creative people doing what they love, inspiring others, and creating a niche for themselves that's outside the box. Brought to you at 6:30 on Monday nights on KSFR and webcast live at www.ksfr.org. With Living Juicy, I bring you the people, the events, the ideas that delight, enlighten, inspire, perhaps transform. We talk with healers, artists, performers, dancers, directors, filmmakers, musicians, chefs, writers, poets, cultural anthropologists, and visionaries. You know, music and sound have been known for many years as a healing modality and as an aid to meditation. The classical music of India evokes emotions and stills the mind. My guest tonight is Michael Brody, an experienced violinist in Western, North Indian, and Celtic music, who has taught music and meditation for over 30 years. A versatile improviser, he regularly collaborates with poets, storytellers, dancers, theater, and mime, currently performing with storyteller Diane Wolkstein. From a deep commitment to music for meditation and health, he performs and offers workshops in the U.S. and abroad. He has performed at the Jaipur International Festival in Rajasthan and the American Center in Calcutta, combining Western, classical, Indian, and Celtic music in one concert, as he will show us tonight. His recordings include Celtic Afternoon Concert, a live performance in Manhattan, and Awakening Peace, Healing Ragas for the World, a series of ragas for health, relaxation, and meditation. And this weekend, Michael will be presenting a house concert in El Dorado, ragas, Bach, and Celtic music, on Friday, October 13th at 7:30, so you can phone for directions at 982-7538. I'll give that phone number one more time. And it will be Michael and a man named Phil Hollenbeck who will present a selection of Indian ragas, each with its own emotional effect. To complement the ragas, Michael will play solo Bach, as again he will tonight, and Celtic airs, jigs, and reels accompanied by Phil's pakawaj. I hope I pronounced that right. The pakawaj is a double-sided classical drum that preceded the tabla drums of northern India and is loved for its deep, warm, and expressive quality. So without further ado, let me introduce Michael Brody. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Rhea.
Glad you're here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You bet. Michael, you told me that right out of college, you chose not to pursue classical music, but so what drew you to Indian music? Did you go right into Indian music after college?
I was listening to Indian music through college, particularly the music of Ravi Shankar when he came to New York and performed live. So I heard Indian music many times. And I was attracted to the meditative quality of the music right away. That really followed through later on for how I got involved with it.
How did you get involved with it?
Well, I found a sitar player years later, coming back from England, who was a student of Ravi Shankar and had a very meditative bent himself, named Rup Verma. And I think I had the same affinity as he did, and I realize that now in the direction that I'm going. And lately, let's say 10 years ago, I decided to travel to India and study with a violinist. So I started my studies with V.G. Jog, a very noted violinist in Calcutta, the late V.G. Jog.
Mm-hmm. And you say on one of your albums, Michael, that your teacher in Calcutta, this V.G. Jog, suggested that you combine Western and Indian music in the same concert, and that when you played Bach for his Indian friends, their way of listening inspired your playing. What did you mean by that?
Yeah. He would always ask me to play Bach whenever he went to one of his students over to their house. He would always say, now would you play them some of your Western classical music? So yeah. I would play Bach. What struck me is the way Indians listen to classical Indian concerts, they give the appreciation as they're feeling it, which is a very beautiful thing, right in the moment. Mm. So the artist is feeling it and gets it right at the moment. So that the applause at the end is not as important as perhaps in the middle of the piece, just, I feel that right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they verbalize their appreciation.
Oh, yeah.
Ho, ho.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And when I played Bach for his first, one of his sitar students, she and her friends actually did the same thing while I was playing Bach, and it put me much more into the moment of the music.
Uh-huh.
You know, I started a phrase, and all of a sudden...
Show, don't tell.
Yeah, yeah.
Show. You have Michael has his violin here, of course.
I'll give you an example. I was starting a little bit of the Allemande from one of the partitas in D minor, and I'd play, let's see... I'd hear, ah. And it was later that a violinist that I've always admired, Nathan Milstein, I looked at his program notes from the second time he recorded the solo Bach, when he was 75. He did it when he was 55 and again when he was 75. And he said, I feel I finally captured the improvisational nature of Bach. And it really is an improvisation because you're playing in the moment. In the way that you flex it's called rubato in Western music, the way you're moving.
Play that phrase again, would you, Michael?
Let's see.
And
can we play a little bit of this part?
Please.
Of the
oh, yeah. And it's interesting because when one does allow oneself to appreciate or appreciate verbally, it's as though you're participating in a certain way. You really are co-creating in a sense.
Yeah, it really is the interaction happening.
And how do you combine, not just in one concert, in listening to your CDs today, Michael? What I found every so often was I would suddenly be alerted to inside of a raga, what I knew to be a Celtic sound, even though I'm rather unfamiliar with Celtic music. So would you show how you do that? You brought with you a little electronic tambora.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you can explain to our listening audience what a tambora is.
Yeah, the actual tambora is a stringed instrument with four or five strings.
Okay.
And it creates a drone, a background sound for the Indian music. And it's important not just in its own presence, but that the musicians tune into it. So that I try to play, or we all try to play more and more in tune in each moment by listening to the tambora.
Mm.
The actual tambora is very beautiful, but since it's not always possible to have a tambora on stage, or it can be supplemented. The electronic tambora, what I have here, is a box that was made in India that produces the sound of a tambora.
So if you want to turn it on and then play something with it that's even... you did a little demo before that I loved. You had the tambora with the Indian sound on, and then you played something Celtic along with it.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the Celtic Scottish airs is in the same basic... You could say it's in the same notes as one of the ragas.
Okay.
And it works beautifully with the tambora. Yeah, sound like this.
Thank you. Fabulous. Yeah. Yes, and it does go incredibly well with that.
Yeah, the rag is actually rag Bhupali. An Indian listener, musician, will know it from these notes.
So that was a Scottish air you were playing,
yeah,
with the tambour and the background, which I'm sure can be heard.
Yeah.
Right. So for your concert on Friday night, Michael, in El Dorado, it's at somebody's home in El Dorado, you will be playing ragas and Bach and a Celtic music with Phil Hollenbach, who has played with Mickey Hart's Diga Rhythm Band. Is that right? And Phil Hollenbach is local. He's from Taos.
Yeah, he's also one of the top, most experienced Pakwach players. You know, one of those people. There's few here in our country.
So it will be rather special to hear you both.
I'm looking forward to it very much. And the fact that he'll be able to will embellish and beautify the music that I can come
much
up
improvisation,
with.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yum! That sounds great. And then you do a workshop on Saturday, October 14th. You're going to be doing a workshop in Santa Fe at the Rail Yard from 2 to 4 p.m., quite inexpensively. I can't say what it will be, but it will be very inexpensively. And it's on sound as a meditative tool. It's a musical journey. And how will you have people participating, Michael?
It's interesting. It's a workshop that came about as a result of some of my own discoveries and what's important to me in music. What they'll be doing in the workshop will be both listening, vocalizing, using Western vocalizations and Indian vocalizations, and experiencing some of the silences between the music. I mean, that's the most important part to me in the workshop, actually.
Just as space to an artist is the most important thing, the space between the lines and the colors, I think sound, silence, the space in the music is similarly important.
Yeah. I think it's an experience I think a lot of us have had, that the sometimes after listening to a piece of music, the beauty is actually that moment afterwards that's just so delicate and so beautiful. You could say it's a meditative moment. And it's nice to experience that as well as the music.
Michael, in one of your emails to me, you made reference to teaching the seven sacred vocals. Do you want to explain that? Michael and I know each other for about 30 years as a result of a metaphysical school we were both part of called Eureka and are still somewhat part of. Tell us about the seven sacred vocals and how you use them.
Yeah. Should I tell you where I got them from?
Please.
Yeah. I mean, I first got the seven sacred vocals in Hawaii from Oscar Ichazo at reunions of the school, and they are a placement of seven vowels in the body. And as he had explained, they're ancient. They're a couple of thousand years old. But going back into the references, which I did, and found those references of where they came from, he had actually placed them in a way that had been was very precise. So in using them in the body, they're placed very specifically. And as in Indian music, you can get to the point, in fact, even right away, you can feel your body vibrating, and you can sometimes feel, I'm feeling it in the chest, I'm feeling it in my solar plexus or in my throat. With the vowels, they're placed very specifically, and it's a nice thing to do with the Indian music. And the since there's a CD of the vowels, which had been is publicly available through the Institute of this school.
Through Eureka Institute.
And I was actually delighted to use them in a music meditative workshop up in Woodstock area for the Sri Aurobindo community, which they asked me to do. It's lovely. And one or two of the people in the workshop ordered the CD. They said, where can I get it? We want to make that part of our lives.
Well, the vowels, of course, turn the chakras. I mean, they tune, turn or tune, both work. And before we go any further, I seem to have made a slight mistake on the phone for directions, the El Dorado concert. The number to call, actually, for how to get there is 982-7534. That's 982-7534. So that's for the El Dorado concert on Friday night, the 13th,
thanks,
at 7:30. And again on the 14th, the number to call for the Rail Yard is 982-3516. And that should be a wonderful two-hour workshop. I'm going to take that. I love the
great
idea of sounding and listening to the spaces between. So that's very exciting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to having a lot of people there.
What's your connection, Michael, between music and health?
Music and health. It goes back a ways. It's hard for me to remember exactly where it started, but I'll tell you some of the threads.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing some playing for music for hospital patients, mm-hmm, in oncology wards, and actually going into the rooms with a tambora and a violin. It's very beautiful with the meditation. And I was traveling in India. You know, when I first went to India, I took a vacation in Pondicherry and met a doctor named P. Bharati. And she plays the veena, which is an old instrument similar to the sitar, played in southern India. And she's a physiologist. And her main emphasis in life is music and healing, music and health, targeting ragas, which you could say roughly scales, to different health ailments. And I was in Pondicherry for about a week, and someone I was having dinner with said, you should meet this woman. And I went over to see her, and she played one of her tapes for me for a little while. You know how sometimes people are just intuitively get a feeling that they'd like to work with someone?
Mm-hmm.
She didn't actually hear me play the violin, but she asked me to come back and do some CDs with her. And I came back a year later, and we made two CDs, and then another year later and did the same. And those CDs have also been used in yoga, in hospitals. You know, people have used them actually in health situations.
And she told you even before she heard you play that this was your thing in life.
When we were talking, she said, I think you really need to record with me because I know this is going to be a very important direction,
mm-hmm,
for you. Yeah,
lovely.
It's nicer.
Well,
yeah.
One of the CDs that she recorded with you is called Vridhi, and they're ragas for growth. And let's hear just a minute or so of those, and then we can go back to talking with Michael. We're back in the studio. We're talking with the wonderful musician, violinist Michael Bharati, who is here from his home in New York to do a concert in El Dorado, a house concert in El Dorado of ragas, Bach, and Celtic music. And the number to call to phone for directions is 982-7534. And that's on Friday night at 7:30. So, Michael, back again. So good to see you from New York.
It's great to see you again,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
yeah.
I wanted to ask you something about the relationship between the kind of music that you play, between all music, but particularly the Celtic and Indian music that you play.
Yeah, there seems to be a soulfulness connection between the two musics, and I've tried to pinpoint it a couple of times. I've gotten an interesting feedback once from someone. I'm trying to pinpoint it. The concert that I played in the America Center in Calcutta, which is really nice that the consulate put together, I mentioned to the audience that there was some soul connection between the two, and I wasn't sure what it was. Oddly, in the result I got, someone came up to me at the end, and she introduced herself to me and said, I'm the deputy commissioner of the consulate, and I'm an Irish-American, and your answer is that the Celts came from the Himalayas.
Whoa.
I haven't gotten a confirmation of that and whether that's accurate.
Oh, cool.
But whether it is or not, there's an affinity between the pentatonic scales that are used in the two musics and definitely a soulfulness. And you could say throughout all musics, there's such a connection between the different musics of the world. I mean, for me, it's so beautiful that in India, there's no separation between the different artists and the kinds of music they play.
Uh-huh.
And
lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you something about when you work with patients, what is your relationship to the patient, and what is that, again, talking about relationship, the musician to patient and music?
I think it seems very important, the arc, or let's say the relationship that you have in the moment with the person that you're playing the music. And I mean, it's like playing for an audience, but it's very, very deep.
It's an audience of one.
Yeah, an audience of one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a friend of mine in India, up in Shantiniketan, which was the Rabindranath Tagore country north of Calcutta, who had spent 40 years playing in hospitals in Germany. She's an Indian woman. I asked her what worked for her, and she had the same feeling, that she said the relationship between the musician and the patient was almost equally important to the music that you chose to play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it
And so do you find that with Indian patients or with Indian people in general, they are far more responsive vocally to your music than, say, American audiences who hold back and don't have that tradition of vocally?
Well, the Indians are teaching us that. Uh-huh. There are some wonderful Western audiences now, of course, that have developed and I think are finding that same affinity. But they're getting it from that culture in the music, I think, yeah.
Nice. Would you like to play a little more Bach for us?
Sure.
Or whatever you choose, whatever you choose. And if you want to add the tambora, you can do that too.
Let me do that.
Improvise.
Let me play a little bit of another Bach and weave it into something else. Let's see where we are. This is from the same partita, actually. Second movement.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking the way they weave with the tambora is to show you a little bit more, as you asked with the tambora, of what I meant by going into silence with the music, which happens with the Bach and the Indian. And if you take just the beginning of an early evening rag, which I think we'll probably start with on Friday, which is called Yaman, it's one of the most popular rags, there's this improvisational quality, of course, in the Indian music, because it is all improvised. And there's also that quality that I mentioned of being in the moment and listening as you're playing. I was going to say just before I play, one of my favorite of the Indian vocalists of the past was named Amir Khan. When I heard him hold a note, you'll notice that it's continually coming into the present, like every moment is different. It's something about the Indian music that you can trade over to other musics, that, you know, as you play it, it's not just played, but it's played and then it's getting warmer and warmer. So the rag would be like this. just stay with that silence for a little bit, and then you're into another phrase.
That coming into the present is very beautiful. It's sort of approaching the present until it comes into its fullness. And then the silence allows you to really savor it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the experience in sitting together and working with music in a workshop is like that.
Mm-hmm. And this workshop that you do on Saturday, would that be, it will be interactive? You will probably have people in a circle or something like that.
Yeah. And I've said people will be vocalizing or practice singing, working with the sound. But as I said, no preparation or previous singing necessary.
Good.
And you go right into the sound of the instrument just with that. Sa, pa, and right into sa, sa, ni, re, ga, re, sa. Working with the voice. So let's say it's a very easy way of going into the voice and into sound. I've had an experience once with a vocal group where someone said, I can't sing, and then she sang, said, I didn't realize I could sing. We can all sing.
I don't sing, but I just realized I can sing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Great.
But yeah, does that describe kind of how the workshop will go? The
and you can really come in on that wherever you want.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to show it with my voice, because for me it's almost as pleasurable or more to sing as it is to play the instrument that I play. It's really wonderful to use the voice.
Well, it really tones the body. To sing.
Yeah,
I mean, in many, many traditions, dancing and singing is just part of their life. We separate it.
Yeah.
You know, you're either a dancer or a singer, but most people don't sing or dance when they can. It's so much an incredible part of life.
Maybe we're bringing people back into that. We can bring more and more in. That's wonderful to do.
Certainly hope so.
So I'm looking forward to doing that.
Do you think you've been an Indian in a former lifetime?
I think there's a good chance, and probably a Celt as well.
What's living juicy for you, Michael?
What's that?
What is living juicy for you?
I think it's really being in my body, in the voice. Really in the voice.
Ah.
Love the voice.
Ooh, that's the first response I've heard quite like that. That's extraordinary. By the way, Kathy Aiton, who is my guest of 2 weeks ago, the Earth Dirt Artist, shows at Victoria Price Gallery. And I think there are still some things up of hers. You might want to check it out if you heard her. Anyway, it has been my great pleasure to talk with Michael Brody. Remember that on Friday, October 13th, 7:30 p.m. in El Dorado. Phone number is 982-7534. Michael will be giving a concert. And on Saturday at the Rail Yard, 2 to 4, there is an interactive workshop, 982-3516. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you very much for having me.
What a pleasure.
Pleasure to be here.
Listen up next week when you have somebody almost equally juicy. Good night. You think you've seen the sun, but you ain't seen it shine.